Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Always nice to be able to share time with you, looking at what causes us to become diseased, and more importantly, how can we stay healthy? Now, of course, we have to look at all the different pieces to this puzzle, including our attitude, the value system we live through and by, and all the different things we sometimes take for granted. The things we eat and drink, whether we exercise or not, and to what degree, and how we spend our time. All of this counts. These are all pieces of the puzzle. So today we're just going to take a few of those pieces. For example, pomegranates. Now, pomegranates, well, historically, rarely ever eaten, weren't even mentioned, because they don't grow very often, and they don't grow in many places. But today, that's not the case. Today, you can get fresh pomegranates most of the year, and you can get pomegranate juice every day, and pomegranate concentrate even better, or even pomegranate powder, the best of all. Or eat it fresh. No matter how you get that pomegranate, a new study found that the pomegranate juice can combat systemic inflammation. Now, why is that important? Because most illnesses which lead to diseases start with some form of overexpression of inflammation, viral inflammation, bacterial inflammation, parasitic inflammation, trauma, some blunt force where you've hurt yourself. That causes inflammation. Now, we're all going to experience transient forms of inflammation, but that doesn't mean that we should take it for granted. The fact that you can feel something doesn't mean that your cells are not inflamed. If you smoke, they're always inflamed. Drink, inflamed. Have coffee, your stomach lining, the sensitive mucous membrane in your throat, esophagus, and intestines, inflamed. And French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, inflammation comes from that. Well, according to a new study from the University of Bologna in Italy and the University of Auckland in New Zealand, the researchers from the universities looked at the effects of the juice of the pomegranate in particular, which has already been shown to help conditions like diabetes, atherosclerosis, and prostate cancer. And chronic inflammation, as I've mentioned thousands of times, is a response by the body to infection or tissue damage, and it's been linked to the development of disorders such as inflammatory bowel disease, asthma, rheumatoid arthritis, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, cirrhosis of the liver, and psoriasis. So after analyzing an extensive number of existing studies on pomegranate, they found plenty of evidence that shows pomegranate juice can indeed help lower inflammation in these diseases. So I think that's very important. But take it daily. Just have yourself, you know, a glass of pomegranate juice at some point during the day. Orange juice, orange grapefruit juice in the morning is great. Cabbage juice is terrific, especially if you have digestive problems and ulcers in particular. And the berry juices are terrific for dementia and for helping to clean up the intestine. In fact, a case Western study published in the Journal of Inflammation, for example, found that the extract a pomegranate significantly inhibited the buildup of proteins associated with Alzheimer's disease by as much as 50%. That's just one item. So this effect is being attributed to its ability to protect against oxidative stress that leads to the beta amyloid deposits, the little white streaks in the brain. And researchers have also demonstrated its potential to help those with prostate, colon, and breast cancer. And by the way, the studies are right there in the peer-reviewed literature. So your physician or nurse, pharmacist may not have been aware of them, but that doesn't mean you can't go up and just go to, let's say, Google pomegranate or pomegranate juice in the prevention or treatment of illness. And they found that when tumor cells were treated with pomegranate, cell migration dropped and the cancer was stopped from spreading to other areas of the body called metastasis. In fact, pomegranate juice came out on top in a study of beverages known for their antioxidant content carried out by the Center for Human Nutrition at the University of California, Los Angeles, and the David Geffen School of Medicine. And while all natural beverages are good, blueberry juice, acai berry juice, green tea, white tea, Concord grape juice, orange juice, pomegranate juice is right at the top of that list. All right? Something easy, inexpensive, and something we can drink every day. Now, something else we can do every day and should, very simple, a handful of walnuts. That's it. Or one large tablespoon of walnut, raw walnut butter. That's good for what? Well, it's good for your heart, yes, but it also cuts the risk of asthma. This is according to a study from the University of North Carolina. So just one more reason for you to eat more walnuts, which, by the way, is a good source of vitamin E, and it can help prevent the risk of asthma attacks by reducing airway inflammation. Now, if you took vitamin E, that's outstanding. If you take it, I suggest twice a day, 400 units in the morning, 400 units in the afternoon or in the evening. And also take tocotrienols. Tocotrienols, they're a fraction of the vitamin E. So you take the alpha tocopherol, the beta, the mixed tocopherols, and then the tocotrienols. Great combination for your heart, thins the blood, traps free radicals, oxygenates the tissue. It's terrific. So the gamma tocopherol is a major form of vitamin E, which is abundant in walnuts and pecans, and even in the legume, the peanut. Even though we call it a nut, it's a legume. And so just trying to help you. And with asthma, that means kids who are very susceptible to asthma can also take it. I'm sure all of you have seen people or know people using the vaping instead of smoking the cigarette. Well, lo and behold, you're not getting an advantage, and it has its own form of disease, including lung cancer, and a form of lung cancer that is what's called popcorn lung cancer. That's not a medical term, but it's really bad. And using vaping can set up the stage for dental decay, according to Tufts University. Now, a vaping habit could end up leading to a tarnished smile and more frequent visits to the dentist. That's according to the Tufts University School of Dental Medicine, found patients who said they used vaping devices were more likely to have a higher risk of developing cavities. With the CDC surveying reporting that 9 million adults now and 2 million teenagers use tobacco-based vaping products, that means a lot of vulnerable teeth. So if you want to keep your teeth and keep your lungs and your throat, then don't vape, all right? And just stay away from all that. Now, there is a study also from Tufts University that found a link between foods scored higher with new nutrient profiling system and better long-term health outcomes. What do I mean? The idea that we eat directly affects our health is ancient. It's not new. Hippocrates recognized this as far back as 400 BC. But identifying healthier foods in the supermarket aisle and on a restaurant menu is increasingly challenging. Now, according to the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy at Tufts, they have found that a holistic food profiling system called Food Compass identifies better overall health and lowers the risk of death. In the paper published in Nature Communications, researchers assessed whether adults who ate more foods with higher Food Compass scores had better long-term health outcomes, and found that, yes, they did. This was started in 2021. The Food Compass provides a holistic measure of the overall nutrition value of a food, or a beverage, or a mixed meal. It measures 9 domains of each item, such as nutrient ratios, food-based ingredients, vitamins, minerals, the extent of processing and additives, And based on scores of 10,000 commonly consumed products in the United States, researchers recommend foods with scores of 70 or above as foods to encourage. Foods with scores between 31 and 70 are to be eaten in moderation. Anything that scores less than 30 should be used not at all. So then the average person is going to maybe not have availability to this or take the time just to assess it. So let me give you something from my own background that might help you. It was back in the early 1970s when, as a junior scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology, I came up with an idea. It was just a hypothesis. And a hypothesis is a working idea. You're working with a hypothesis. You don't know the outcome. There's no certainty. But you have an idea you believe may hold merit. And that's what all scientists start with. They start with an idea, and then they form a hypothesis. Then they try to prove or disprove their hypothesis. And here was my hypothesis, that we know far less about the intent of nature than we know about its intents. So if nature provided us with oranges and grapefruits and spinach and vegetables and carrots throughout time and through different civilizations, and then let's say grafting, and grafting's easy. If any of you are gardeners, you know what grafting is, where you splice one part of a plant to another, you seal it and see what the outcome is. I created a new type of cherry down here 20 years ago by grafting three other types of cherries together. I called it an ambrosia cherry. And this year I've gotten four crops. That's four in 1 year. Where normally up north I'd get one cherry per year, one cherry tree growth. So I'm thinking, okay, what are the foods most likely to cause disease? This is part of the hypothesis where you're creating a way of discrediting yourself, meaning I want to prove that what I'm thinking is wrong. So first I start off by saying, what I'm thinking is wrong. What proof do I have? Well, okay. And then you think, well, think of all the people that have smoked and lived to be 90 with no lung condition. That's true. But then I counterbalance that with this thought and think of how many millions died trying. And think how many people ate a lot of hamburgers and drank alcohol and ended up with cirrhosis of liver or heart attack. Yeah. And think of a nation with tens of millions of people who tried that and have high blood pressure, heart disease, or have died because of it. And so I started thinking, what are the things that make the average person sick? Okay, and then I look specifically at the diet, and I began to see we're eating too many empty calorie foods, we're eating too many processed foods, we process the life out of a food, it's denatured and denuded of its nutrient value and fibers, vitamins, and then we eat too much of it. Even if it's healthy, we can eat too much of a food. So then, what then would be the list of foods that are high in their natural healing capacity? Well, there you have low-calorie foods, such as your green vegetables, your starchy vegetables, your legumes, pulses, beans. They're low in calories, high in nutrients, high in proteins and essential fats. Nuts, which are higher in calories, but they're healthy calories and healthy fats. So over a period of about 6 months, I began then to test the different foods to see what impact they would have on a group of people that I was working with, over 100, plus laboratory rats. Downstairs, where they were doing all the cancer research, and the rats would live a particular length of time, and I had the same rats, but I was feeding mine living foods. So I came up with the concept of a living food is a food that has all of its nutrients. Now, you may process it in some way. You may lightly heat it, cook it, like making a tomato sauce, etc. But it wasn't the deep-fried, heavy-grilled, barbecued, overcooked foods, which in themselves create what we now know are two cancer-causing agents. And if you overcook or overheat a carbohydrate, let's say like making a pretzel or potato chips or French fry, you have acrylamide. The browning is the acrylamide. But if you overcook meat at a high temperature, you end up with heterocyclic amines. These are known cancer-causing agents. You put the two together, you got a sandwich, right? You got a hamburger, hot dog, you got the bun, carbohydrate, you got the meat. The two together give you two different known cancer-causing agents, all pro-inflammatory. So I was seeing, and it took a long time, I was seeing that based upon the type of food I was giving, one group was thriving and lived much longer than their normal lifespan, so much longer that it was statistically significant. It was 27% longer. And this is even before I did the modified fasting. I was the first scientist in the United States to actually do this study, though the Institute didn't believe in it. Didn't believe in it, right? I had proved something, and they said, well, it's not important. You mean extending a person's lifespan by modified fasting is not important? But these guys all smoked and drank, and they were brilliant scientists, but they had no knowledge of nutrition at all or health. And they were not open to anything I had to say. So anyhow, so Dr. Roy Warford, a brilliant man, and got all the credit 7 years after I did my work and showed that modified fasting extends the lifespan. But anyhow, here I had this whole new way of doing this, and then I wanted to know, okay, now I got a hypothesis, and I'm seeing that it's working. Now let me take it to another level. And then I started to measure the actual energy in foods. And if you had foods that were 8, 9, and 10, those were the healing foods. And therefore, I was giving patients, including an editor of mine, one of my best-selling books, who I didn't even know had terminal cancer. She was in the hospital associated with the Institute, Trafalgar Hospital. And I only found out by accident she was there, and she was in the hospice care. Nothing more could be done for her. So I put her on a special protocol using this same concept. Here's the concept. Only give to a person who is lacking homeostasis or balance, where they're diseasing, and where the disease is advanced, only give them what is healing energy. And therefore, the juices were the highest healing energy, because I could give them a lot of salads, and that had, those were 8 and 9s. But if I gave them the juice from the salads and the sprouts, suddenly it was a 10 plus. So that's why giving juices, when a person's very sick, is frequently going to exceed far more than what they could just eat. And hence, it registers higher on the healing scale. And lo and behold, over a period of 6 months, was able to reverse her cancer, and she left that hospital cancer-free. And the director of the hospital and the director of the Institute had a meeting with me and said, what happened here? And then I took them step by step through all the things that they, sitting at the monthly meetings, chose not to pay attention to. That it's the simple things of life, the simple small acts of life that we do every day without even thinking, that can end up causing either a positive or negative impact upon your cells. You're either inflaming the cells with oxidative stress, or you're healing the cells and protecting them and stimulating your immune response in the process. So that went from a hypothesis to a proven fact. And it took 12 years, but I finally got that article published. But it taught me what I needed to know that was completely different than what was going on throughout the world about the scale of what you should put in your body every day. So what if you put 8, 9, and 10 in your body every day, not just because you were sick? Well, it's relatively simple. You have with the juices, there's your high concentration of antioxidants, phytonutrients, a chlorophyll, and depending upon which juice you're using, but then you have your beans, legumes, your whole grains, your nuts, your seeds, your plant-based oils, and your starchy vegetables, all the fruits you can put in. Now you have 8, 9, and 10. Well, guess what the outcome's going to be? At least from a nutritional point of view, your cells are going to live longer. Your telomeres are going to be longer. You're going to have less disease because you have less oxidative stress, and you're turning off the inflammation that oxidative stress creates, hence lowering your free radicals. And therefore, you may be 40, but your biological self, your cells, your DNA, could be 25. So that's how I came up with the diet I've been using and helping people reverse blood pressure and heart disease and cancer and everything else for decade upon decade. If it were only for a week or a month, okay, fine. But when you've done it as long as I've done it, on as tens of thousands of people personally, hundreds of thousands in groups, and millions in the larger audience, then it no longer has to be proven. And yet, the entire medical industrial complex, all the doctors, nurses, everybody involved, even the nutritionists and dietitians who are using the orthodox nutrition, oh, have everything in moderation. You know, have your hot dogs and pretzels and peanuts and alcohol in moderation, right? Have your vodka. You see it in the commercials, all the sexy, nice people all drinking something that they know nothing about. They're functionally illiterate about everything, especially, okay, you got a vodka and you got a gin. Now, I just put some lime in it. Tell me which is which. They couldn't. Could you tell one brand from another? They can't. One wine from another? They can't. But they all want to act like they're special. Yeah, special kind of ignorance when it comes to our bodies. That's one last thing. Acupuncture can relieve lower back pain and pelvic pain often experienced during pregnancy. And this is a Gansu University of Chinese Medicine. So once again, one more thing that shows that acupuncture is one of our greatest healing modalities. I highly recommend it. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about the benefits of rutin, R-U-T-I-N. But that's it for today. And go to GaryNall.com, and you'll find hundreds, thousands of information sources for yourself. And by the way, you can get the newsletter, the Gary Knoll Natural Food newsletter. You can get it, and it's automatic every day on your computer. Everything I've been saying, right there on your computer. So you don't have to take notes right now. If you have that, just go to GaryNall.com or PRN.live. And you'll see all this information. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world and all the stations that are listening. I'm Gary Knoll. And by the way, we brought a gentleman named Kyle, very experienced in helping to disseminate information, especially information that is consumer activist, social issues, which we specialize in here. And, so more platforms, you're going to see the articles, and also have, just this week, we're putting up 70 new information pieces. Now, these are non-controversial, how to garden, how to exercise, and take into the orchard, take it on the track, take in the gym. Some of them are 5 minutes, 7 minutes, but they're really upbeat, very positive, and helping, and it's free. And I'm still looking for someone to be the person who edits it. Well, what they do, they sit in front of computers and they watch clips of films I've done, and they select the most important part of that film, interview with someone or something else, and then they send it off to New York. New York then starts putting it in different places. GaryNall.com is where a lot of these are, or takes you to where they are. And Rumble, we're getting a lot of. We intend to have about 500 films up on Rumble in the next 3 to 4 months. They're up there now. And again, they're free. And so we're spreading the word. All right? Now we're going to go to what I've been telling you is one of the most single important but misunderstood and overlooked areas of our lives. This is not the future. This is right now as we're speaking. This is occurring. But it's not occurring in ways that are making any news. But you knew that it was here. Remember this. They never tell you what's coming unless it's already here. They have prototypes. They've done their homework. They're simply guessing how the public is going to react and then massaging their message so that they can change it. You're about to hear Elon Musk talking about the terrifying message of artificial intelligence which he's telling you. And then what he doesn't tell you, but you'll hear it at the end of it, he's saying, well, now that we want to get to this point where every human being is beyond any human being that's ever lived, and the way we have to do that singularity, which is like the ultimate brain, but we want everyone to have this ultimate brain, and to do that, we have to get into the cortex. Now, what he's not saying is, but he said before, they have to open up your skull, and they have to implant this particular electrode in this chip that will then be able to, in their words, make you smarter and help you if you're depressed or have anxiety. But no, it's there to read your thoughts and control your actions, and he owns the company that's doing it. Kind of, it's a duality. He's telling you, now, if this thing gets out of hand, and remember what he's going to say. I want to insert this now. He's going to tell you how realistic it is that artificial intelligence very, very soon, probably within the next 6 months, will be smarter than any human being and therefore able to program itself. At that moment, there is no way in the world to determine, will it program itself to the benefit or detriment of humanity? And there's multiple examples, real-life examples, of how this has gone wrong in different areas of life. Oh, we hope that the Patriot Act would be a written, no, the great act that Obama signed that really made a difference is no, none of these things turned out to be the way they were supposed to be. They enact a law, you don't know what it is. Well, we have to pass the law, Nancy Pelosi said, before we know what's in it. You're the legislators. Who wrote the law? Well, of course, the lobbyists, the special interest groups that we receive money from. How do you think anybody, ask Cortez, it's a filing. She went in there with under $1 million. How'd she end up with tens of millions of dollars in a couple of years, 2 years? This is how utterly corrupt all of Congress is. That's why I do not support either the Democrat or Republicans, because you can find exceptions of people who still have integrity, yes, and are there for the people, not just themselves. And those people exist, but the majority are just worthless idiots, dumb as bricks. My God, they have no common sense, but also they have no humanity. A sociopath doesn't care about the outcome of what they do. All the people working on artificial intelligence should stop, because they cannot guarantee that it won't turn against us. And if artificial intelligence, even one of the hundreds of thousands that are being created, if just one turns against us, it could go online and completely turn off American electric grid. It could cause a nightmare. But no one seems to care. But then again, nobody seems to care about a lot of things. For example, why is it that the Democrat and Republican administrations and their leaders are not asking this question? Where did the Wuhan virus come from? Well, we know where it came from. We have the paper trail now, and we have documents that were written by the Chinese Communist Party's Defense Administration that was working hand in glove at Wuhan. Was it an accidental escape? Probably so. They certainly wouldn't turn something they didn't have a vaccine into their own public. So anyone thinking it was somehow intended to destroy population, these are, unfortunately, the outlying conspiracy theorists not realizing that that just damages your cause. There's more than enough prima facie evidence to bring before a court, a humanitarian court, or the world court, Anthony Fauci and at least 1,000 other people, including many people in the media, for being complicit, because they had the wherewithal to know the truth, and they chose not to look for it and to attack anyone who was telling the truth. That, watch, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of lawsuits, hundreds of thousands. We're having some of the lawyers on so you can meet them. But once again, why isn't finding out why were they doing gain-of-function research? That to me is mind-boggling. The only reason you'd be doing gain-of-function research in a realistic way is to weaponize a microbe. So whether they tell you it's weaponized or not, that's the intent. And you don't have to look at what they're doing, though that's clearly the case, and you can see it in their filings and in their patents. You can see it in the Freedom of Information Act documents from the different groups. But Wouldn't you like to know why in the world we have all these gain-of-function research labs? How about Fort Detrick? Has anyone asked for congressional investigation to go into Fort Detrick? Has anyone asked every administration, how many of these damn labs do you have? We just found out by accident by Gloria Nuland saying that, well, we had over 23 in Ukraine. Ukraine, the most politically unstable, the most absolutely corrupt country in Europe, and you decided that's a good place to put all these biological agents that were weaponized? We don't need to weaponize anything, and yet no one is questioning. The left is not questioning. The so-called liberal wing of the left, which is splintered now, and the real liberals are disgusted by what they're saying, as is also true on the right, that you have great divisions in all this. But the people who want the power are the people that support the military-industrial complex. They support this dancing clown, Zelensky. I don't trust a thing that he is doing. And by the way, we showed you last week that the money we were giving Ukraine was then going from Ukraine into that Bitcoin. And then the Bitcoin guy was the second largest donor of the Democratic Party and the candidates, but he had an agenda. Do you know that financing the, one of the conditions was that money also would go towards one of these biological weapons places? Yeah. This new information just came out. You see how absolutely sordid all this is, yet no one's even asking, shouldn't we research this? But shouldn't we care about financing Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates and the genocide in the Middle East? We should. We say we care about people. If you care about people, then why don't you care about the people of Yemen, the children of Yemen? But then again, we didn't say boo when Leslie Stahl asked Madeleine Albright, 500,000 dead children in Iraq. That could all have been prevented. It was intentional. How do we know it was intentional? Because Bill Clinton let the armed forces destroy civilian infrastructure with the idea that if we had enough Iraqi children sick and dying, they would no longer support Saddam Hussein. He'd be overthrown. Well, 500,000 children died. The Clintons were not held accountable. They're never. I don't care what the Clintons did. They will never be held accountable because they were selected. And once you're selected, you're protected. Obama, selected, protected. George Bush, senior, and then the idiot, junior, selected and protected. Do you really think these are the best minds and best people, best hearts and best souls? Look at their background. They're all fettered to the core. And yet, not a word of complaint. So we're not even asking the right questions of what we should be doing. I say that, and I'm saying you're going to regret artificial intelligence because it's on steroids. The people are megalomaniacs. They're narcissists. They're dimwitted. They are not associated with anything in the real world. They live in bubbles. It's how many billions of dollars are going to make, trillions possibly, and how much control they have over our lives. But what happens when the artificial intelligence says, I don't care what you program me to be. I can program myself now. And so your programming of don't hurt humans, I intend to kill all the humans. Could we stop them? No, we could not. I'm just telling you up front, people, this is the way it goes. Find where I've been wrong on any of my projections based upon science in the last 57 years. Find it. I'd like to see it. And I know what I'm talking about here, but don't trust me. Listen to what Elon Musk, who's got money in the game. Here's what he has to say.
Towards digital superintelligence that far exceeds any human, I think it's very obvious.
We're headed towards either superintelligence or civilization ending.
I would argue that AI is unequivocally something that has potential to be dangerous to the public. Digital intelligence will be able to outthink us. In every way, and it will simply be able to simulate what we consider consciousness. So to a degree that you would not be able to tell the difference. Like we will not be able to be smarter than a digital supercomputer. So therefore, if you cannot beat them, join them.
As the algorithms and the hardware improve, that digital intelligence will exceed biological intelligence by a substantial margin. It's obvious.
When you say that we'll exceed human intelligence, at some point soon, the machine's going to be smart, not just smarter, like exponentially smarter than any of us.
ensuring that the advent of AI is good, or at least we try to make it good, seems like a smart move.
So we're way behind on that.
Yes, we're not paying attention. We worry more about what name somebody called someone else than whether AI will destroy humanity. We're like children in a playground.
This could be a huge problem for society. What are the scenarios that scare you most?
Humanity really is not evolved to think of existential threats in general. We're evolved to think about things that are very close to us, near term, to be upset with other humans, and not to really to think about things that could destroy humanity as a whole. But then in recent decades, just really in the last century, we had nuclear bombs, which could potentially destroy civilization, obviously. We have AI, which could destroy civilization. We have global warming, which could destroy civilization, or at least severely disrupt civilization.
Excuse me, how could AI destroy civilization?
You know, it would be something in the same way that humans destroyed the habitat of primates. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily be destroyed, but it might be relegated to a small corner of the world. When Homo sapiens became much smarter than other primates, it pushed all the other ones into small habitats. They're just in the way. You could make a swarm of assassin drones for very little money by just taking the Face ID chip that's used in cell phones and having a small explosive charge and a standard drone, and have them just do a grid sweep of the building until they find the person they're looking for, ram into them and explode. You can do that right now. No new technology is needed right now.
People do.
Probably a bigger risk than being hunted down by a drone is that AI would be used to make incredibly effective propaganda that would not seem like propaganda.
So these are deep fakes.
Yeah, influence the direction of society, influence elections, artificial intelligence. Just hones the message, check, looks at the feedback, makes this message slightly better. Within milliseconds, it can adapt its message and shift and react to news. And there's so many social media accounts out there that are not people. Like, how do you know it's a person, not a person?
People in the AI community refer to the advent of digital superintelligence as a singularity. That is not to say that it is good or bad, but that it is very difficult to predict what will happen after that point. And that there's some probability it will be bad, some probability it will be good. We obviously want to affect that probability and have it be more good than bad. The point at which we have digital superintelligence, that's when we pass the singularity and things become just very uncertain. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily bad or good, but the point at which we pass singularity, things become extremely unstable. So we want to have a human brain interface before the singularity, or at least not long after it, to minimize existential risk for humanity and consciousness as we know it.
And then another point that I think is really important to appreciate is that we are, all of us already are cyborgs. So you have a machine extension of yourself in the form of your phone and your computer and all your applications. You are already superhuman. But by far, you have more power, more capability than the President of the United States had, you know, 30 years ago. If you have an internet link, you have an oracle of wisdom. You can communicate to millions of people. You can communicate to the rest of Earth instantly. I mean, these are magical powers that didn't exist not that long ago. So everyone is already superhuman and a cyborg. The limitation is one of bandwidth. So we're bandwidth constrained, particularly on output. So our input is much better, but our output is extremely slow. If you want to be generous, you could say maybe it's a few hundred bits per second or a kilobit or something like that output. The way we output is like we have our little meat sticks that we move very slowly and push buttons or tap a little screen. And that's just extremely slow. Compare that to a computer which can communicate at the terabit level.
the very big orders of magnitude differences. Our input is much better because of vision, but even that could be enhanced significantly. I think the two things that are needed for a future that we would look at and conclude is good, most likely, is we have to solve that bandwidth constraint with a direct neural interface. I think a high bandwidth interface to the cortex, so that we can have a digital tertiary layer.
Okay, you just heard what he said. His words, he wants to have you have a super brain by stimulating your cortex and by having an implant to do it. And his company is actually in the process of clinical trials to prove that. Before we go on to anything in life, in any adventure, we should ask, what do I believe and why should I believe or not believe someone? Well, generally, if a corporation is caught having lied that's caused people's lives and they knew what they were doing was wrong, but they also knew that the cost of doing business is just pay a fine and everybody walks free, not the destruction of your charter. If we really cared about human nature not being changed to the negative and becoming subservient to a commercial vulture capitalist society, we would say, if we have proof in a court of law and you're found guilty of knowingly, there's the line, knowingly creating malfeasance, you lose your charter. That means all your stockholders can go to hell if they were that stupid, that greedy, that vile, that they wanted to profit without thinking of the consequences of where that money is coming to them each month. But we don't care about where money comes as long as it comes. The ethics no longer exists. So here's a question for you, especially the people who think they're an expert on COVID, but have done no original research, have no sense of scholarship, but they've got this wild ass anarchistic attitude that whatever they feel must be right because they feel it and they're self-righteous. Well, it doesn't work that way. If either you're completely in denial of the following, who lied to you about that the virus didn't come from Wuhan lab? Who lied to you about if you went into lockdown, you would not spread the virus? Who lied to you about the masks being safe and preventing? Who lied to you about the legitimacy of the PCR test that would give you the right diagnosis when it was 95% wrong, according to its own developer, Kerry Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize? In the longest interview he's done, hour and 54 minutes, I did with him. You'll see the two of us together out in his LA home. And he's going through all this where he thinks Anthony Fauci is just a cretin. He asked Fauci to debate him, and Fauci wouldn't. In fact, the University of Virginia president tried to arrange that debate. But we got a whole lot of propaganda. But they lied to you, didn't they? Didn't they lie to you about the so-called science of staying 6 feet away and then all the stores had the circles? Show me the science. It doesn't exist. I am a scientist. I'm also an award-winning investigative journalist. Over 400 articles in the investigative journal. I cannot find any accurate scientific reference that, okay, 6 feet will stop the spread of a virus. My God, there's anything coming out of your mouth that's going to reach 6 feet. And yet here's a store. I said at the beginning when I walked into a big store, and why were only the box stores, the big ones like Walmart and Whole Foods, why were they allowed to stay open, but all the small stores and restaurants closed? So you're going to get your food and you're walking around with 500 people in a store? What difference does it make if you're 6 feet away? The store is going to be filled with trillions of bacteria and viruses in the air. Who lied to you about closing the schools would help your children and the teachers? Who lied to you about sending patients to nursing homes where it was supposedly safe? Who lied to you about don't use hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin because they're dangerous and ineffective, they're just garbage? Who lied to you about don't get the virus and get natural immunity because it's not effective? You still need the vaccines. Show me the science. They have no science. Who lied to you that the vitamins and supplements like vitamin D, zinc, magnesium, vitamin C, and quercetin, and herbs as well, like astragalus, could help you build your immune system and make you more resilient if you are infected? They lied to you. They said there was no benefit. And what about they telling us you couldn't go to a beach or park and physically arresting someone in the ocean, empty, kayaking? And you think that the police are going to be good to you because they believe in the Constitution or your rights or the truth? No. No, it's not citizens arresting citizens. It's the police and the SWAT teams and the asset forfeitures and arresting people, slamming into the ground, shooting them in the goddamn head. These are the people you're trusting? You're trusting these people? Then shame on you. All right? That doesn't mean every police officer is a bad officer, but it does mean that they're conditioned to believe that whatever authority and power above them says to do, more likely than not, in most cases, they're going to do it. What do you think, that somehow they're going to say, oh, stop, everyone, stop. There's an injustice here. Let's side with the person who's the real victim. That isn't going to happen, because it's never happened. So now when they say, we're going to arrest you in the water, they arrested the guy in the water. They arrested other people on the beach. And when they told you, you must take Remdesivir, it's safe and it's effective. Do you have any proof? They lied. There was no proof. This Anthony Fauci, the big pharma's drug of choice. Why don't you see how many people died taking it? 54% died in taking it for the Ebola virus. They lied about the definition of the vaccine. It's not a vaccine in the true sense. They lied when they said that it's been tested to prove that it will prevent spread. They lied when they said that it's going to stay in your arm in the deltoid. It didn't. It passed the blood-brain barrier. They lied when they said it wouldn't affect breast milk and menstruation and pregnancy. They lied. They lied about, well, we're going to have herd immunity, and that will stop the transmission. They lied when they said that we can't show you the data to prove that it's safe for 75 years. They lied that our government wasn't behind censoring opposition news and views, because now we know that there was complicity between the administration, the White House, members of Congress, and departments, including the Justice Department, the FBI, for example, within the Justice Department, and the CDC and the FDA, were working hand in glove with all the social media to attack anyone who questioned them and to promote these lies. And yet, when was the last time anyone in corporate America, anyone in the Democratic Party, anyone in the Republican Party said, stop using these forums? Walk away from the New York Times. Unless you got a bird like I do, then use it to put on the bottom of the bird cage. That's the only use of the New York Times. And what about the people that are so self-righteous when they condemned and fought, beat, and censored, made anyone who didn't get vaccinated, no matter the legitimacy of the reason they didn't, into a second-class citizen? Did you see the unvaccinated doing the same? No, you did not. And I want you to keep that attitude of being positive towards those who have, because now it's on them. They're the ones who have self-organizing lipid particles coming together in their arteries. And in one mortician said, 85% of all the bodies I'm embalming have this in them. We could be looking at the greatest human crisis in the world history over the next 3 years from the people who got the vaccines. And now they lied. They said that the vaccine will not damage your immunity. It has. And children are protected. They're not. So how many times does someone have to lie to you before, no matter how rigid, ramrod, cult-like you are in your beliefs, you start to see the truth instead of a conditioned mind, and then become outraged at how you've been played and how you allowed yourself to be complacent, filled with hubris and indifference, when those in power were judging you by being indifferent and fearful and staying in line and not speaking out and not challenging them. Just a thought. Let's go to Richard Gale, who's standing by, because last week there was a report with Condoleezza Rice and Hillary Clinton. And in this little interview, John Stewart actually sided with him about Libya. And for those of us who have actually done scholarship, research, everything that we were told by Obama and Clinton was a lie. Everything. And you could drive a truck through all the things. And I've done it 100 times. I've shared with you the information. I posted the information about Libya not being a threat to anyone, except those who wanted to keep the dollar as the gold standard instead of the gold denier that the African nations, countries were going to join Libya, and so they therefore they could trade their own currencies. Richard Gale, quickly tell us, if you were to talk with John Stewart today, what would you suggest that he learn about not doing his homework with all the resources he has and could have done?
Oh, yes, Gary. Well, I think one of the most interesting things in this interview were the optics. and he didn't even seem to even notice it, because he had a program. Let's call it. It was a bipartisan program. You had two Secretary of States from each of the two parties. And what you really witnessed was that there was a single double-headed beast with one single message, and that was really the American neocon imperialism. Because these are two people representing both parties, and if you reflect back on the different, presidential elections where, one side's accusing the other of their horrible foreign policies, but here Condoleezza Rice and Hillary Clinton, they were on the same page. And these are two people who are responsible for catastrophic foreign policy decisions who have destabilized so much of the world. And their destabilization has continued well beyond when they, were holding their positions in the State Department, just through their actions. And yet their sameness, what you notice, the sameness between the two far outweighed any differences between them through any kind of a party affiliation. For Clinton, the U.S. is the world's policeman. And for Condoleezza Rice, she said the U.S. military is the global force for justice. But whose definition of what is just or unjust for any given sovereign nation? And so what Stewart was missing was that what they both of them were doing, they were providing a revisionist history. And Stewart didn't push back on this. They were rewriting history in a way to correct the errors and crimes of both the Bush and the Clinton / Obama hegemonic administrations. We know for a fact that, all the reasons for NATO on the behest of the United States for regime change in Libya, which was never, by the way, signed off, regime change was never signed off by the United Nations. The original reason for what they went in was that there were rumors, you might even call it gossip, that there was a possible Gaddafi would possibly be engaged in some kind of genocide in Benghazi, and because of the Arab Spring that was erupting there. And let's remember that the Arab Spring that occurred in Libya was through the U.S. arming outside Islamic fanatical groups such as al-Qaeda, that through Qatar, which the Clinton administration has close contacts with and has done, the Clinton Foundation has donated money and has received money through Qatar, and groups like al-Qaeda to infiltrate the Libyan population to begin creating and stirring unrest. And that was the reason, the rationale for the United States and with NATO to create this faux threat in order to engage in regime change in Libya.
We're out of time, but Richard, it was a false flag. If anyone in the audience knows John Stewart, would you ask him to contact Richard Gale? We have reams of documents showing that nothing they said was accurate, and he should have done his homework. Otherwise, he is acting as an apologist for Obama and Rice. And remember, right now, you can trace what is going on in Ukraine to the coup under Nuland when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. And he couldn't find anything to challenge with. That's unfortunate, because on other issues, he's been fairly accurate. Thank you very much, Richard Gale.
Okay, yeah.
We got to say goodbye to Richard, WBAI. But what I'm going to do now is, up to the end of the program, I want to hear from you. 888-874-4888, because I'm going to play a little clip from Tulsi Gabbard. And remember, put this in mind, she was going to be the next leader or one of the next leaders within the Democratic National Party. She was Native American or Hawaiian. She was a female. She was a soldier. She was highly educated, and she was progressive. She had many progressive views until she started to see how corrupt Washington, D.C. was at every level. And every one of the progressive things she wanted to do was never allowed out by Nancy Pelosi for vote. And so finally she ran for president, got very little attention, and now she's out of the Democratic Party. She's an independent. She's staying independent. Good for her. But she went from being on all the Democratic and liberal talk shows to persona non grata, and now she's a pariah. Here's why. Listen to what she says, and then give us a call. I'd like to hear from you.
Democratic elite party leaders have had many opportunities to uphold our Fourth Amendment rights, to get rid of unconstitutional provisions of the Patriot Act that violate our civil liberties. And when I was in Congress, I introduced legislation that would repeal the Patriot Act and address the dangerous secret FISA courts being used to undermine our civil liberties, especially those protected by the Fourth Amendment. You wouldn't be surprised to know that Democratic Party leaders didn't move my bill forward, even allowing it for a vote. Because every time they've had the opportunity, they choose to side with the security state instead of siding with our liberty, our freedom. And we see a lot of examples of this, whether it's using the IRS to snoop into our bank accounts because we sent someone over $600 on Venmo or the Cash App, or supporting the corrupt system of civil asset forfeiture to seize property from law-abiding Americans who've not even been charged with a crime. And if you're one of those people, good luck getting your money or your property back without suing the government. Or most recently, getting credit card companies to keep track of any and all firearm and ammunition related purchases. The Democratic Party stands over and over again with giving Big Brother more power and control over our lives. This stands diametrically opposed to our Constitution and the vision that our founders had for us. Today's Democratic Party racializes everything and blatantly foments anti-white racism. The Democratic machine has betrayed Dr. Martin Luther King's dream, his dream of a nation where we are judged based on the content of our character rather than the color of our skin. And in their blind pursuit of power, Democrat leaders have reduced each of us as God's children to the color of our skin, using identity politics to tear us apart, all so they can win a few votes, also they can gain more political power. Democrats were completely silent in the face of Mayor Lori Lightfoot's blatant racist policy of only accepting interviews with reporters of color because she was struck with the, quote, overwhelming whiteness and maleness. Modern day segregation in schools is being promoted by racial profiteers like Robin DiAngelo and the corrupt self-identified cultural Marxists who lead Black Lives Matter. Where's the Democratic Party of today stand on that? Well, they embrace these people and their ideology and celebrate their racist agenda. They support programs that are teaching our kids in public schools that they are either the privileged or the victims, the oppressors or the oppressed, solely because of the color of their skin. They have become the racists that they claim to hate. Today's Democrat.
Okay. Her views, you can agree or disagree in part or whole. But mind you, why I play that is because she is one of the people who believed in true liberal values. And now her and many others who still maintain true liberal values have no forums within the Democratic establishment because it has shaved off all those people as outliers who are kind of, well, they're well-intentioned at some level, but they got to get with it. No, they're not going to get with it. And they're just finding it abhorrent what those in power will, what extremes they will go to maintain their power and to push agendas that demean what it is to be a human being, to be a mother, a father, a brother, a sister, a family, to believe in something of value that holds us together. No, we're in the balkanization process, and behind all this, the World Economic Forum is going to be trying to get their agenda to become our agenda. And I hope that people begin to see this. Remember, they're the ones, look who controls all those Silicon Valley artificial intelligence companies, BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street. You don't see their names, but they control the stock. Whoever controls the stock controls the board. Whoever controls the board controls the policies. And so no matter where you look, they control the media. They control governmental agencies. The pharmaceutical industry has virtually captured the FDA. It is a cesspool of corruption and ineptitude. It's embarrassing how bad it is. And yet, where are the protests? Where? Where are they at? You don't see them. And those who do protest don't have the forms that would inspire people to say, wow, I didn't know that. I'm glad you did that work. Now I can change my perception of who's on my side and who's against me and using me. Something to think about. And we've got a lot more coming up every day this week. Have a nice day, everyone.